Good evening and welcome to Talkin' Music. I'm Allie Lightfoot. Chicago-based multi-instrumentalist and lyricist Andrew Bird played at the Telluride Bluegrass Festival last month, where I had a chance to sit down and ask him some questions. Bird's music is an eclectic looping mix of violin, singing, whistling, and playing guitar. He's recently been performing with Tift Merritt and just released a new album called Things Are Really Great Here, sort of. A collection of handsome family covers. I started by asking Bird how he discovered this obscure band and why he wanted to do an album covering their work.
I spent most of the 90s and early 2000s in Chicago, and they were kindred spirits and really unique people on the scene there. And they're a husband and wife duo. She writes all the words, he writes the music, the melodies. And it's like my life's mission to like bring their music to a larger audience, to kind of try to elevate it, because the way they present it is very specific and it's awesome, but it's like in a sort of goth country, sort of dark, you know, it's a specific thing, and you're either into it or you're not. And they just used one of their songs in True Detectives on HBO, and and you know what I'm talking about if you hear that. But I like taking their songs as like a blueprint and just kind of starting over and building them up again. And I really connect with the writing, the lyrics. It's so strong and does what I think the best songs do. Songs of Townes Van Zandt or John Prine or Leonard Cohen, they distill into just a few words what could really turn into a novel. It's like so much emotional impact from just a couple words, and they pull that off, and it's a rare thing. So I've been playing their songs for 15 years.
This is Tin Foiled off of Andrew Bird's latest album, Things Are Really Great Here, Sort Of.
What is moving will be still. What is gathered will disperse. What's been built out will collapse. All of your dreams, they're all fulfilled. Late New Year's Eve, paper hat on your head. It was hard to believe that you'd ever be dead. And that dream that you're falling, had since you're five, is a bird on your shoulder that whispers goodbye, goodbye. What is moving will be still. What is gathered will disperse. What's been built up will collapse. All of your dreams, in a bed, she was certain that sky that would fall on her head. And Evel Knievel shot up from dead grass, and I loved him better each time that he crashed, that he crashed. What is moving will be still. What is gathered will disperse. What's been built up. Came down to the nest in my hair, in my hair.
you're known for improvising and reworking your songs during live performances. And I feel like your songs take on a life of their own in the way that you create them. In other words, like, you don't have it all planned out. Can you talk a little bit about that and just how maybe you have to let go of a song and let it take off and do its own thing?
Yeah, I mean, I don't like that feeling of when a song starts to sort of clamp down on what it's supposed to be. I like that moment between when it, before it exists, and then it exists. You know, there's like, it's a mysterious moment, and then the creative process is like that. So I think it doesn't feel right to get on stage and for the creative process to stop. It should keep going, and it's just like another way of sort of pinching yourself every night, is to say, this song doesn't have to go the way it did on the record, you know? It's just a frame, you know, it's just a starting point, you know?
And even in the studio, do you try a bunch of different things? Because you have so many sounds that you're using and so many genres that you're mixing and layers and layers and layers. Do you come into the studio with a composition, or do you do a lot of, you know, trying different things out when you're recording?
I mean, there's a distillation process of like, I work by myself for a long time, and I make these loops, and they kind of evolve into something else over a period of hours. But over the time, I'm like picking out the best stuff and kind of distilling it down to the most potent, you know. Ultimately, I improvise with the intent of finding a melody, just like I think Louis Armstrong used to. He wasn't kind of trying to take you off on a journey. He was trying to, like, you know, everything was new every time he played it, but he was still trying to find a concise melody. So I still appreciate that process of distilling it into something potent. But once you get on stage, I think it needs to live and breathe. And that, there's no reason that inception, moment of inception that happened a year ago can't happen again on stage.
I noticed while I was listening to all of your music today that nature is definitely featured in so many of your songs, and it's sort of like the dramatic part of nature. What's your connection to nature? What did you, where did you grow up, and like, where did you sort of develop your relationship with nature?
Well, my family comes from farm country, Western Illinois, Iowa. My dad's from Iowa, and my mom's family's from Western Illinois, and my folks have had a farm for most of my life in Western Illinois. And, you know, I've mostly been an urban dweller, but I've spent a great deal of time out there, and it calibrates you to hearing music differently. There's like a whole, when you can see a storm coming through the valley and passing over your head and then moving on, it's like calibrating the way you might hear a phrase, or we might hear time and music. So when you're in dwelling in apartments and that storm is over you before you know it, and you're only looking 3 feet in front of you every day, that's going to affect the music you hear. So it's a real challenge to slow down enough to have that happen. Mm-hmm. But I've always had that thing in music where the environment can affect you, and you can also affect the way you see in the environment as you're playing the music. That happens out there. Like, I'll make these loops and time will slow down, and the way the wind moves through the soybean field, you know,
right.
it can have this incredibly moving, dramatic effect.
If memory serves us, then who owns the master? How do we know who's projecting this real? And is it like gruel or like quick drying plaster? Tell me how long till the pain starts to peel. Is it like Paramus or Apollo or an archer we don't know? No, history repeats itself and time's a crooked bow. Come on, tell us something we don't know. Good things must come to an end, every day the night must fall. How it all came to this, I simply can't recall. Too many cooks in the kitchen, how the mighty must fall. But I can't see the sense in us breaking up at all. Oh, I can't see the sense in us. That forgetting, embellishing, lying machine.
You've probably been asked this question more times than you want to, but with the whistling, like, why are you so good? Is there a spell? Do you warm up? Is there anything you do to be that good? Or
It's tough in high altitudes and desert environments, and definitely can't have a drop of liquor before a show anymore because it affects your, it's kind of like your embouchure, like, you know, for horn players. I was having trouble whistling low on stage at Telluride because it was just, it's the altitude and the dryness, but
I have to wet your whistle. That's like a true thing.
That is a thing. I was desperately trying to do that, but it's just something I do incessantly. It's just an escape valve for ideas. And so it'd be weird to stop doing it when I got on stage.
Are there other whistlers that you, admire? Like, other...
No, I mean, everyone has different techniques, which I think is interesting. Like, the real... folks that can do the bird call stuff. I can't do that. That kind of octave breaks, you know. I'm like Pavarotti. That's more like full-throated, a lot of air being pushed out, whistling. And it has that effect. It kind of slices through all the sort of mid-rangey stuff of the strings, and it just kind of at first I thought, oh, you know, it's just so casual. It's like it's a whimsical thing, and I should resist putting that in my music. But I found it had such a way of like making people stop and listen.
Oh yeah. A few years ago, and we had a terrible drought followed by floods in different parts of Colorado, but I was listening to something biblical during that time, and I feel like there's sort of these themes of not necessarily concern about the environment, but maybe some sadness about it.
Sure. I mean, I wrote that song during the Midwest drought like 2 years ago. I was out there in the summertime, and it was just like bleached. The whole landscape was just a mess. But I was having these weird dreams about floods coming down from the mountains and you know, washing everything away. I don't know. I don't sit down and write songs with the intent of anything really political or that's not on the front in the front of my mind, you know. But it seeps in there for sure. 'Cause the things you care about end up in your music.
Take your apples from the earth and your fingerlings from the air. If you cried when you were born, 'cause it ain't fair, you got nothing, nothing to wear. And there's a drink that we're all needing. I need to weep, but we have tried. And know the clouds to keep on seeding. Still the county remains dry. The county remains dry. The county remains dry.
There seems like there's a very direct connection between you and the violin, and it seems like you can do everything that can be done on a violin. Was it like love at first sight with that instrument, or have you grown to have a relationship with it?
I was 4 years old when I started, so it was not a conscious love affair. No, it was just something I did every week. It was a routine, as kids are fans of repetition and routine. It was the one-room schoolhouse approach, where every week you're in like a room with a bunch of kids playing the same pieces, but some of them are playing stuff that's a little more advanced than you, so you hear them, and that's a really brilliant idea to this is a Suzuki method. It's basically like learning folk music, you know, being immersed in something by ear. It's just a little more scripted, maybe. My voice has a connection with the instrument. I sing sometimes the same note I'm playing, and And when I match those pitches and I find that tone and I'm like trying to, same thing in the whistling, I'll do pizzicato and whistle the same note. And the way those notes kind of come in and out of tune creates this friction that's kind of, it's kind of interesting. But it's funny, like sometimes when I'm really exhausted, I'll forget what the next move is. And I'll get the streams crossed. They're all, and that reminds me that they're all kind of the same. It's just at my whim, it's a choice of which one comes out, whether it's whistle, singing, or fiddle. And sometimes I'm supposed to sing and I whistle, or I'm supposed to whistle and I play. And that's all fine, but you know, yeah.
Do you have dreams about the violin?
No, because it's been such a part of my life. It's like it's neglected. I like to abuse the violin. I like to leave it in the corner and not bother to wipe the rosin off the strings, you know, because it's like it's had such a pull over my life over the years that I like to be like, I don't need you, you know.
Yeah. So I read somewhere you said that the best ideas come out of desperation and that boredom has been a motivator for you, which I thought was great because most of us don't look, you know, we're not looking for boredom, but it is an instigator of a great many things. Do you find that you have to find some time to be bored?
I look forward to long, like 8-hour drives where you have to just stay awake. And aside from pulling the hairs out of your legs to stay awake, you know, sometimes just playing kind of word games in your head is where some of my best lyrics come from. Like fake palindromes I wrote driving through Georgia down to Florida. And I was desperate to stay awake. I had no idea it was going to be a song or one that people connected to, but yeah, that kind of you have to kind of get goofy and entertain yourself, and that sort of freedom, that detachment from your everyday matter of fact thinking, like I need to do this and this, but your schedule, you want to get as far away from that as possible. It's getting, finding that kind of space is getting more and more scarce, but it's important.
Yeah.
Everybody's wrong. You know that everybody's wrong.
That was the song Near Death Experience off Andrew Bird's 2012 release, Break It Yourself. You've been listening to Talkin' Music on KVNF. I'm Allie Lightfoot. Stay tuned for All Songs Considered, coming up next.